Time to check in with Richard Roper and find out what's on his mind and what everybody's talking about this morning. The reunion, Bam Bam, back with his or her owner. I don't know if Bam Bam is male or female. Do you?
Bam Bam, I would assume, is a guy, but you never know. You know, I don't know what Bam Bam's pronouns are. We can find out. I always thought that name was going to take off more after the Flint. You know, Bam Bam is a. We had Bam Bam Bigelow. I think it was a wrestler,
now. Yeah. Happy ending to this story.
Yeah, you know, and this dog was missing for 2 months, a companion to this lovely man who's legally blind and just loves his dachshund so much. And you figure after 2 months, this probably isn't going to end well. But the story's interesting, though, too, from a media standpoint, Bob, because we've had two of these stories, because there was also the this one was in Logan Square. And then I think in Gage Park, there was a dog, a micro bully is the name, is the breed of the dog, which I thought was Danny DeVito's character on It's Always Sunny. But no, it's a beautiful breed of dog. And in both cases, they were kind of mysteriously returned. In the case of Bam Bam, like a couple showed up at a local district, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just said, and then the stories we have so far, they say, well, they didn't want to offer any information. They just said, you know, here's the dog. And
yeah,
it's like,
no,
well,
one
did
is
they find the dog? And I'm not saying they didn't, they were participating in any nefarious activities, but
well,
where was Bam Bam?
The police are investigating, but no one is in custody.
No, and in both cases, and in the second case, we heard that there was somebody who was maybe being offered the dog for sale and might have recognized it or didn't see the proper paperwork. And, you know, Bob, every time we see these stories, you just think, like, who's stealing dogs out there? That just seems like such a, I mean, all crime obviously is horrendous, but it seems like there's just a special place in the dark afterlife for people who steal dogs.
No kidding.
Right?
It's not as unusual as one might think, is it?
2 million dogs are stolen annually. That was according to my friends at the American Kennel Club. And, you know, certain breeds are very popular, the Chihuahua, the Yorkie, and sometimes, you know, the worst case scenario may be used in some sort of, you know, fighting scenario, but in most cases, it's for breeding or reselling, because, you know, someone says, oh, I just want a dog, and I can get you a dog for $200, and it's the old fell off the truck, it's sort of like escape from the kennel. I think people know when they're getting a dog in this circumstance that it's...
So you're saying there's a big black market for dogs?
Apparently so. I mean, 2 million a year, and again, it just seems like... And you know, people say, well, make sure you microchip your dog, which you should, but I think there's a little bit of a misconception there about, I mean, the microchip, you can ID the dog if you find the dog, but it's not like the AirTag you have from Apple that you put on your bag that gets, you know, sent to the Detroit airport instead of O'Hare. So it's not a GPS.
Uh-huh.
Someone needs to go, Elon, come on. We need the microchip to also have a full GPS, because then you could see, oh, Bam Bam's on Wilshire Boulevard. What's going on here?
Yeah, a lot of people would get that for sure.
But the estimates, unfortunately, like when dogs are lost, they usually are found. Because, you know, you see the old-fashioned flyers people put up and they go on the internet. And if a dog just runs away or, you know, gets out of the yard, I think it's about a 90% return rate. When they're stolen, when you know it's stolen from you, it's much, much lower, unfortunately. So good news in both of these stories.
Yeah, we think with social media, maybe it's easier to recover a lost dog, but not a stolen one.
Yeah, the lost dog, because, yeah, everybody in the near, and everybody wants to find the dog, but when they're stolen, it's like with carjacking, there's this extensive network. All of a sudden, you know, the dog is in a different state and unfortunately probably lost forever.
Well, happy that in this case we have a nice reunion.
Yes.
Media news this week. Michael Phillips, who was reviewing movies for the Tribune, is out. He says he took the buyout, but this was after the paper eliminated the role, wasn't it?
The actual position of film critic. You know, the same thing really happened with me about 6 months ago, as you know. In fact, I saw you. Lisa was doing a show, right? A remote from Harry Carey's.
That's right.
On the day where I was officially taking, and this guy comes up to me. There's not no security apparently anymore at Harry Carey's. But Bob, that kind of led to us, you know, reuniting, because you were like, hey, you're getting off the, you know, the hamster wheel of reviewing everything. And that's what I said to Michael, too. I mean, you know, this is the evolution of film criticism, both newspapers. I think it's very sad when you think of Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert at their respective newspapers. And then Michael, and there were other, a lot of great film critics. But there's life after writing for the newspapers, you know, as I found out. I'm writing, as you know, for RogerEbert.com. And when people say, oh, you know, film criticism, is it still out there? it's kind of fascinating because when I go to these advanced screenings, you know, Dean Richards, I'll see there, and Jake Hamilton from Fox, and Dan Geyer, who's been around forever. And, you know, you see a lot of folks still there. And then you see all these influencers and bloggers and TikTokers. And you, everybody knows about Rotten Tomatoes, right, where you can get the aggregate. There's 1,000 critics on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, and is that why the newspaper critic doesn't have the power or pull that he or she once did?
I think that's exactly what it is. Now, you, what you want to do is how do you sift through there? And from my standpoint, it actually helps that there's so many because I've been around long enough that I know that idiot. So, you know, you kind of you can kind of break through there. But, you know, in a lot of cases, I think the people that you see at these screenings and that are on Rotten Tomatoes, it might not be a full-time position. They might be on YouTube. They could be TikToking. They could be a lot of them are podcasting or blogging. But, you know, the job of the film critic, and everybody, and as you know, I do TV as well, TV criticism, and everybody says it's the greatest job in the world, and it is. But I looked back, and just before I took the buyout from the Sun-Times, I was doing about 7 reviews a week, right? And that's feature films, and then like 7 or 8 part limited series. And if you do the math of going to the movies or watching 7 or 8 hours, doing the research, writing the reviews, it was 50 hours a week just to start. And I know the average person right now who's out there going to a real job is like, oh, shut up. Mm-hmm. But it consumes your whole life.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot.
There were more than 400 feature films and more than, I think, about 1,000 original limited series, true crime documentaries that were released last year. So it's also a little bit overwhelming.
Yeah, it takes the fun out of it, I would think.
Yeah, yeah, because back in the day, it was Roger and Gene, and then I got to do the show with Roger for most better part of a decade. We'd pick the 4 movies, maybe 5, and then do one new on video.
Yeah, we all remember this. It was sneak previews right then at the movies,
yeah.
And then when you were on it, what was it called?
It was Ebert and Roper in the movies. And then, of course, as you know, I'm sure, Dick Marx wrote the theme for that, Richard Marx's father, the great, who also did Here Come the Hawks, and the Channel 2, right?
Oh,
the Channel
yeah, that's
2 theme,
right.
All of that. But the opening there, and you can see it on YouTube, is really cool because it's Gene and Roger, you know, squabbling over their respective newspapers. The trucks are showing up and dropping the bundles of newspapers on the curb, and then they show them in their respective offices at the Tribune Tower and at the old Sun-Times building, you know, clacking away on the typewriter. But the whole idea was 2 newspaper guys, and Roger told me this story, when they first got on the air and it went syndicated and went nationwide. So it was on in L.A. on KABC, and Jack Nicholson called up Harry Dean Stanton and said, you got to put on Channel 7. There's 2 guys who look like us talking about the movies.
Well, but this is why it's so sad that now there's no movie critic at the Trib. Sun-Times eliminated that position a while ago.
Yeah.
Chicago became the film critics' capital because of Ebert and Siskel.
And they always kept the production right here. We did the show here. They never wanted to go to L.A. and become part of the house. So it was also great that, you know, over at Channel 2, where you were at, and then eventually over at Channel 7, before that at PBS,
right,
that it was such a local thing. And I do find it sad because there still are a lot of newspapers that have full-time film critics, and I think it's sad that in the third largest market, neither of the newspapers has a full-time
critic.
Yeah,
depressing sign of the times. Well, I didn't want you, after I heard you took the buyout of the Sun-Times that day when I saw you at Harry Carey's, I didn't want you to be down to just 11 jobs. So
Thank you. Maybe
you'd come in here once a week.
I'm grateful for that. I am, truly.
Talk to you next Thursday. Richard Roper.